The Corian Football Club podcast is kindly sponsored by the Lodge Hotel, famous for food, functions, and fantastic value.
Good morning once again, and this is your weekly welcome to the official Corian FC podcast for another week. Actually, coming to the end of February, so the year and the days and the weeks are going very, very quickly. So, talking of spring, we are indebted as ever to our kind sponsors, the Lodge Hotel in Corian, who have got lovely offers on spring staycays on the Causeway Coast. So stay for two nights, for example, in a double or twin room, plus £15 per person dining voucher for Elliot's Bistro, fully cooked breakfast the next morning, and let check out. So always worth a check, the Lodge Hotel, what offers they have on as well, particularly coming into the spring, as they say. So with that all done and dusted, it's another warm welcome to my co-host, Johnny McNabb. Johnny, how are you this week?
Grand, man. We just got back here from Euro about 2 hours ago. No, it was good. Good to get a win, obviously. Good to get the momentum going. Spending my Sunday watching Celtic score in the last minute and then Liverpool winning the League Cup wasn't the most ideal day I've ever had, but sure. Good weekend all around, I think. Good to see Chevy scoring again and Conor McHenry's goal. That's goal of the month, probably. That's probably goal of the season sort of for us. So a good day all round, and look, another clean sheet as well. So yeah, all good.
Yeah, to be fair, now on Sunday I did think about you because we had been talking on Saturday that you were going to a friend's house to watch the League Cup final, and he happened to be a Liverpool fan, and I think there was another couple of Liverpool fans at that, and you being a Man United supporter, that didn't work well. And I did flick over the Scottish football and I did see Celtic draw 1-1 with Motherwell, and then they scored twice in the last, and my heart did go out to you, I have to admit.
I'm sure it did, Damien. No, you can't write that sort of thing. Listen, football's all about the I think just the League Cup final, on a side note, just probably summed up where the two clubs are at. I think Liverpool have a lot of heart and desire, and they obviously play for the manager, and you know, they're a team and they need it. Whereas Chelsea are just a lot of players and a lot of big money and maybe just not clicking as a team yet. So, one of them things. And I think if one person was going to score, it looked like Van Dijk, and it was a great hit for them, unfortunately. So, one of them things. And sure, life goes on.
Well, let's hope Liverpool have softened Chelsea up for Leeds' visit there tomorrow night. The mighty Leeds roll into Stamford Bridge. But listen, talking about Chelsea, it happens to be a very handy link to our special guest on the podcast this week. And I'm delighted to welcome Junior Mendes to the podcast, head of performance at Corian Football Club, and a striker who actually began his career at Chelsea. Junior, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Oh, pleased to be on. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I was looking and doing a bit of research, as we do on this podcast the odd time, the odd occasion, on our guests. And I did happen to notice that you did begin your career at Chelsea, your youth career at Chelsea, and then you did play a little bit of senior time at Chelsea. That was mid-90s. And I'm just wondering, when I read that, not being a massive Chelsea fan, I'm just wondering, Chelsea was a different club. Who was in charge at Chelsea then, and who would have been the players that you would have rubbed shoulders with, Junior?
So I think I went to Chelsea at 13. There was a scout who scouted me when I was playing for my district, and he took me. He was first at Millwall, then he went from Millwall. I think Chelsea headhunted him. And he went over to Chelsea, and he took me with him as well. And then I stayed there from 13. His name was John Phillips, really great guy. I trusted him implicitly, really. So I went over to Chelsea, and at the time they were playing all of their kids and stuff in the first team. I remember speaking to my dad, so I was like, I would have a good chance of getting in the first team. And little did I know that as I was coming to the end of my professional tenure at Chelsea, they just went the totally opposite way. So I didn't get a chance in the end. And the players that they brought in, you know, they didn't really look back. They did miss me, put it that way.
Who did they bring in around that time then? Was that the start of the Chelsea as we know it today, the spending power? Was that the start of it?
Yeah, it was. I was there till I was 20. I had some, you know, great, you know, football wise and football education. I had Graham Ricks as my youth team coach. He was a really good player, a really good coach. I had Glenn Hoddle was the manager at the time. So I spent loads of time around you know, those types of coaches. Glenn Hoddle was very hands-on. I learned a lot, and the players I played with as well, I learned a lot from as well. There were some really good players as well back then, and my career kind of peaked really at that time. And I'd been watching Ruud Gullit as a youngster when I was 11, 12, and 13, and being the you know, Ballon d'Or winner, and you know, playing for AC Milan, and winning the European championships with Holland, and I ended up getting to play with him. So it was just unbelievable, unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. And like, you're obviously, you were born, you're in London, Balham, I think, in London. I mean, were you a Chelsea fan growing up, or who would you have supported growing up as a young fella?
Liverpool, as because I was a glory hunter. So my, I'm
Johnny,
sorry.
you've just made Johnny very angry.
So I was a Liverpool, but not so much now, because I think when I was being a glory in the glory hunter years, it was because of my cousin. My cousin was a supporter, and he was older than me, and I would have supported any team that he supported, basically. And then about 5 years in, then they wasn't as good, and they started signing players that you wouldn't really remember. And I was like, yeah, I got all a bit disillusioned with Liverpool for about 10 years. So I just kind of stopped kind of following them, really. And then obviously over these last 6 years, I'm a massive Liverpool supporter again.
It's Johnny, I'm not even going to go there, but I mean, that's you can say that if you like about Liverpool fans too, Johnny, because you love them so very much.
Yeah, they're fantastic. No, listen, yeah, I think they're obviously in a good run, you know. Klopp, sort of the turnaround he's had at the club. It pains me to say, you know, but he's been a great, obviously, servant, and what he's done there has been incredible. So he's got his trophy now, so fingers crossed he doesn't win any more between now and he's had his nice moment there on Sunday, but no, I think, listen, I think give credit for Stu, it's going to be a massive void to fill, whoever's going to go in and get that job. So
Will.
yeah, we'll see what happens.
Just going back, Junior, like you were at Chelsea, and then you mentioned your time kind of came to an end there. Difficult, I would have thought, you know, you were what, 19, 20, you say. You've been sort of rubbing shoulders with Ruud Gullit, as you mentioned, and Glenn Hoddle, for example, as well as a manager. So, in that scenario, as a young fella, what do you do when you're let go? Because it's interesting, because now you're almost, you know, the other end of things. We can talk about that later. You know, you've been through that, but for you as a young guy, it must have been tough. What happened next, or how did you deal with that disappointment?
Yeah, it was tough actually. It was quite traumatic really, because for me, because I'd always been like one of the first to be picked, like from, you know, from the 13s, 14s, 15s, and then you become YTS. So YTS, you leave school, and you do 2 years YTS apprentice at the club, as the clubs were all like that at the time. Your first year YTS, second year YTS, you all play together in the youth team against all the other teams, and then you know, decide whether you're going to be a pro. So during those 2 seasons, I scored, and I didn't realize. So nobody really told me that I was quite good at the time, and I was just kind of just playing and just, you know, scoring goals. But I scored 20 goals in the first season, and I scored 20 goals in the second season. And I think, like, if anybody's coming through the youth team now at Chelsea and they're doing that, you know, there's, you know, they're going to be banded around, and you know, a fairly decent price tag on them. And then I got my pro, and then because of that, and because there were so many players, I didn't really get to play as much. And then I got let go, and when I got let go, it was a big it was quite a big thing to me because, as I said, I've always been kind of the first two to get signed, so it was a big kind of shock to my system, really. And then you know, didn't have an agent really, and I didn't really know where to go. And I was very lucky that John Spencer, who played for Chelsea at the time, great guy, John, really great guy. You know,
Scottish guy, wasn't he?
Yes, yes, yeah, Scottish. Yeah, he came from Rangers, and he knew a coach at St Mirren. So I went up there. This was like mid-season, actually. And Glenn Hoddle told me that there was going to be renewing my contract. So I went mid-season for a trial at St Mirren and played against Celtic. And we played a friendly, scored, set up one, and we beat them 2-1. So St Mirren wanted to sign me. I've been on trial since at other clubs, and it didn't go anywhere near as good as that. So that was like again. So I peaked again with my trial there, and I ended up signing for them for the new season. That was really kind of my start in professional football, because I don't think if I didn't have that chance, I was quite slight, and I think if I stayed in England and played in the lower divisions, I'm not sure I would have made a career for myself. But I got the chance at St Mirren. I was there for 4 years, and it was really good 4 years. I really enjoyed my time. I got to learn my trade, it was great, actually. And just subsequently as well, there was a guy who I played with, who was from Northern Ireland, named Russell Kelly, his name was.
He's from Korean, yeah.
Yeah, Russell, yeah, exactly. And I met Russell for the first time in many years just the other night when we played Linfield, which was really nice to see him. So I was in he was in the youth team as well. He was captain, I was vice captain at Chelsea. And when I went to St Mirren, actually, same thing happened with Russell. He ended up coming up and playing for St Mirren as well for a time. So, I mean, he lived with me for a while as well. So, so it was really nice to see Russell the other day. Yeah, so
that's right, because he left here to go to Chelsea as a teenager as well. It's interesting because, you know, obviously that was a different time. I'm just thinking nowadays, if you were in that position where you were playing for the Chelsea youth team and score goals, in all likelihood, you probably would have an agent, and things probably would be different. I just think when you say that you were left almost to your own devices, and that just wouldn't happen nowadays in football, would it?
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. It was extremely tough, and I think in football as well, especially because, you know, I was you know, decent enough player, and the better. And I think everybody would maybe resonate with this, is when you play five-a-sides or whatever it might be, the better the team you're in, the easier it is. So if I went into that Chelsea team, it's a lot easier to play with those top players and get a season or two under your belt. But, you know, I didn't really get the chance. Actually, I did have a chance, actually. I played in a testimonial. It was full first-team testimonial. I actually played okay and scored. But by that time, they'd already said that I wasn't going to be signing. And I remember saying to Glenn Hoddle, I was like, look, all I need, you know, I don't think I've had a chance. I don't think I had a fair crack at a whip. And he was like, yeah, well, you know, even so, fair point. But he goes, even so, we're not taking you. We're not signing you anyway. So for the next season. And it just happened, there was a few injuries that happened. Played in the reserves. I started playing actually quite well. And then I played with the first team there. It was against Leicester City, actually, and I scored, played okay. But by that time, I'd already kind of said to St Mirren I was signing, and there was no kind of backtracking on that, really. So yeah, but you just need a chance. And as I said, I got one, I actually took it, but there still wasn't enough, really. But went to St Mirren, and I ended up playing with a few legends at St Mirren, right? So which is all relative, isn't it? So yeah, so it was great.
Johnny, it's interesting listening to Junior's experience there, and I guess it really illustrates the ruthless kind of nature of football, isn't it? You know, we all love the game, we all love the sport, and it's great, we watch it. But, like, you can put yourself in Junior's shoes there, maybe at 19, 20, you think the world's at your feet, you're Chelsea, and then very quickly you're left there going... You know, it is ruthless. It's a ruthless game, Johnny, isn't it?
It is, and it's probably only got worse, I'd say, probably in the lap, probably since then, you know, with the money and everyone else and players coming in all over the world. So Yeah, it is ruthless. But at the end of the day, I suppose it shows the attitude that people must have to then go on and forge a career somewhere. You know, obviously Junior when they summer in. So yeah, forged out a career. So I'm sure he had a good ground at Chelsea and I'm sure he's got it to go, but at the end of the day he went on and went and played for summer in as well. So was that in the top flight? Would that have been top flight or first division or
Yeah, top flight, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then St Mirren was championship. But that's the, because I've been there, you know, I've always had that kind of burning desire to help players. So when I was an older pro, I used to try and give, you know, advice to the younger players. And when I came to the end of my career, that's why, you know, I wanted to go into sports science as well, because I wanted to help players. And I didn't have that when I was that age, and I didn't know how to look after myself. Because it just wasn't the information out there really. And it maybe took me about 3 or 4 years to kind of understand my body and find out kind of what worked for me. But yeah, that's what I always wanted to do. And then I started like a PT business, because I first started as a personal trainer while I was doing my undergrad in sports science, just to kind of get a better all-rounding kind of knowledge. And you know, I'd always try and get the younger lads to become personal trainers, because if they understand their bodies better, and if they do, you know, don't make it in their career, you know, then they've got a good career to kind of fall back on, or at least have that as a fallback if they are, you know, working on a building site or whatever. Say they don't know how to look after their bodies, and I think it's a really good career in that way. So, yeah, that's what I've always kind of just had that burning desire to do that.
Can I ask you what your favourite ground was to play in Scotland? Because we spoke to Warren when he came back, and he said that he loved managing at Hearts. Because of the stadiums, obviously, the way it is so close to the pitch, what would...
Actually, I'm saying Parts was amazing to play at. We'd always get totally trounced at Hearts. Historically, they always had, like, you know, good teams, good players. Yeah, you just get absolutely just, like, it'd be fives and sixes and that at Hearts sometimes, and it would be like the Alamo, and the first 20 minutes, it's like, just put your tin hats on. Because it would be like, it felt like about 100 shots on target or off target, yeah, close to the off target. So yeah, I loved it. It's really close, and it's usually a packed house as well. So yeah, a great place to play. Great place.
Right, and what about obviously the big two, Ibrox and Celtic Park? I mean, that's some experience probably playing at those two grounds as well.
Yeah, I never got to play at Ibrox. I think when any time a team rolled about, I was either injured or not selected. so yeah, I didn't get to play at Ibrox. I got to play at Celtic, and Celtic's a really kind of surreal. It's really surreal. You see it on TV, and you go there, and it's really quite a surreal place. So I never had enough time in the Scottish League to play at these places to kind of get settled in. Some people, I think, just go places and they just feel at home and they can play. But I was always a person that I'd see all these grounds as a kid and really wanted to play there. And you end up playing, you end up being a little bit kind of starstruck for the first or second time. You need maybe a few seasons to kind of settle yourself in, and me especially anyway. So yeah, that's how it felt when I was at Celtic.
I'll say this in the best possible intention, Junior, like, because I'm looking at your playing career, and I don't want to be disrespectful, but there's quite a few clubs there, isn't there? You say you started at St Mirren, but after that, there's quite a few there.
So I had a burning desire as well to go and play down in England. So because I felt like I had kind of some unfinished business there for obvious reasons. So I was always on my agent's case and that, to try and find clubs down in England, just because I just wanted to just try and play at the highest level, really. So so when I was at Dunfermline and I was in the Premier League, Scottish Premier League, and that was one of my burning desires, to play in the Scottish Premier League. And then when I got there, it was only about five games in, there was a lot of interest in me. So the manager come to me one day, was like, you know, there's a club in Saudi Arabia. There's a prince in Saudi Arabia, because I think they saw a Sky Sports game against Celtic and I played okay against them. So he's like, oh yeah, so, you know, you never have to work again. And I was like, okay, that's how my career up. And then he said, but Wolves as well, Wolves are interested in you. He's like, go away and come back after training and tell me what you think. So I was like, bearing in mind I was only at Dunfermline for like a month or so. And this was my first season in the Scottish Premier League. And so I went away and I thought, no, obviously, you know, I want to do as best as I can in my career. You know, it's not just about money. I was like, yeah, you know, I would like to go to Wolves. So he's like, okay, no problem. So I was, my agent was Kenny Moyes, David Moyes' brother. And Kenny actually took me down to Preston actually a year before. So when David Moyes was manager, and I met David, and really nice guy. And the move never came through at the time. I think it was money or whatever with St. Mirren. So the manager at the time at Wolves was like, the deal will only go through if you use this agent. And I was like, oh, well, I'll use this agent then. So I spoke to Kenny, you know, I was like, Kenny, sorry. You know, I've got a chance to go to Wolves, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, so that didn't go down too well. So that was a bit of a mistake on my part. I shouldn't have done that. Kenny's a really good guy, really nice guy. I really like him up to this day. And yeah, and the Dunfermline manager didn't like what he heard as well when I'd done that as well. So I went down, I trained with Wolves for a week. Went well, they wanted to sign me, but then the manager at the time got the sack about 3 or 4 days later or a week later.
Who was the manager then?
Colin Lee at the time.
Yeah, I remember Colin Lee.
There was Championship. So deal fell through, and then I was back at Dunfermline, and the manager wasn't happy with me for doing that. Yeah, Kenny wasn't happy with me, and right the
was.
And yeah, they put me on the transfer list. That was it. So I was done firming for a month. You know, doing okay, doing well. Clubs wanting me, and then I was on the transfer list, and that was it. And then I was going to go to QPR, possibly interested. They were in administration at the time, so they couldn't pay any money. Dunfermline wanted money for me, so I ended up just cancelling my contract to go to QPR. I went down there. The deal fell through, so I didn't have a club. So yeah, so massive couple of big mistakes here, which I never done again. And Paul Hall actually at the time came available at QPR, so that's why the deal fell through, because he was better than me. Paul Hall was a very good player. He was better than me, and so. That fell through. I went to Rustin and Diamonds, who were in League 2, League 1 at the time. And so I went for a trial there. Everything was going great. And then for some reason, Paul Hall walks through the doors at Rustin and Diamonds. This is about 4 weeks later. Paul Hall walks through the door at Rustin and Diamonds. And the exact same thing happened to me at Rustin and Diamonds or what happened to me with QPR with Paul Hall. And they ended up signing Paul Hall. So I don't know what happened with QPR actually in Paul, but... Paul Hall, they signed Paul Hall, and I was like, yeah, see you later again. So it happened to me twice with Paul, and Paul's a great guy. I love him. Like, he's a great guy. But yeah, he killed me a couple of times in the space of about 2 months. So I didn't have a kid for a while, and then I went back to St. Mirren, and then my career started again from there. So yeah.
It's all sliding doors moments too, isn't it? Yeah. I mean, Johnny, I remember we had Graham Kelly on the podcast before previously. And Graham was in England at a club. Sheffield United, and had done really well, and had agreed verbally a new contract, I think, with the manager before leaving to go home to Dublin.
Yeah.
And I think he was probably no sooner back in Dublin than the manager got the sack, and the contract was taken off the table. And it's just like sliding doors moment, and that's exactly the same as you. One thing you think is happening and it turns out to be something different. I mean,
you couldn't make it up, could you?
That is difficult. I mean, I don't know what your personal circumstances were that time, if you were like with a partner or married or children or anything, but
yeah, no, I wasn't.
Hey, that's a tough existence when you don't actually know where you're going to be working, where your next paycheck is going to come from. That must be tough.
Yeah, that was that, but that, that showed me how resilient person I am, because that was seriously tough. And I remember moving back to my dad's, and I didn't have much money at the time. I had a bit of money saved up, but it was starting to go quite quickly. And, you know, you're going from potentially going to Wolverhampton Wanderers, to potentially going to, you know, a club in Saudi Arabia and, you know, never having to work again. Going to then possibly to QPR, which would have been a massive thing for me, my family, because, you know, from London, and a lot of my dad's friends are from around near Shepherd's Bush. And so, you know, all of that, and it'd just be taken away from you. And I worked with Alan Archibald over at Partick Thistle, and he always said something that kind of resonated with me. And he was like, look, you know, when players have got a chance to have, you know, earn really good money at certain clubs, I'll never stand in their way. And I was like, yeah, like, it's because, you know, there's a lot of sums of money that are being spoken about, and, you know, players' careers are not very long. So, mm-hmm. you know, for things like that to happen can be, you know, quite life-changing, big life-changing events. So.
I could be wrong. Was Leon Knight around your time at Chelsea? No, because he obviously
he was about 3 or 4 years, maybe 4 or 5 years after me. So yeah. I didn't get to meet him, but I know he played for Coleraine. Largely a character. I know a lot of people who know him. He's some guy, isn't he? Some guy.
Mental by all accounts. But what a player, though! What a player he was.
What a player he was. He was some player. Some player. Yeah.
He was. But I mean, I suppose Johnny, what Junior is saying latterly there, when a player has a chance to go and make some money, you know, his coach said that they would never stand in their way, and I think that's important, isn't it? Because, like, supporters, we always think players should stay at the one club and all this kind of stuff, and loyalty is always talked about and all this. But, like, it is a short career, and if we put ourselves in the same position in our job, if you work for obviously the newsletter, if the Belfast Telegraph came and offered you big money to move, it's very difficult to turn it down, isn't it? And we have to remember that, though. Sometimes we forget that footballers have to look after themselves as much as the clubs they play for.
Yeah, 100%. It's a small window, probably, of a career. You're chatting, what, maybe 10, 12 years, maybe at the top or in their peak. So, yeah, get it when you can take it. And I think if you offer a guy to lay bricks at one site and say for £12 an hour, and the next site's £14 an hour, you're only going to go one way. So, yeah, 100%. Loyalty, yes, of course, is great. And I always think that loyalty should be rewarded. But at the same time, you always just can't stand in people's ways as well. So, yeah, just one of the things. And I suppose with football now, and there's maybe not so much loyalty anymore. It's just players, you know, maybe moving on after 3-4 years and everyone else. So, yeah, that's just, it's like probably every walk of life now.
Yeah, you talk about short playing career, Johnny, but like Junior, I think by my reckoning, you had a 20-year playing career, which is pretty good.
Yeah, it went quite long. Yeah, I had like something like 17 pre-seasons back to back at professional, all that kind of full time level. So I can't complain. I've met so many like amazing people. Like it is the best job. It's the best job in the world. And I've always, you know, I've said it recently. As I'm getting older, I'm starting to get a bit more philosophical, and I get. As it happens to all of us, doesn't it? And football, it's sad as well when especially the last 3 or 4 years, so like in the position that I've been in with the sports science, and you get to meet people and the players and you build up relationships with them. And then one day you see them and the next day they're like, where's, mm-hmm. They've been sold or so. Mm-hmm. And that is literally it. Because, mm-hmm. you know, so many people in football, it's really hard to keep up and keep in touch with everybody. So, and that is literally it. And it's sad.
It is, but the thing, looking from the outside as well, football's a great game and it's a great sport, but it's tough too because everybody's competing against everybody else. You know, if you're at a club, like you're a striker, you're competing with the other strikers at the club, and it's dog eat dog, isn't it? It's either they make it or you make it, and there's no... Yes, you can be friends, but when your livelihood's on the line, that kind of has to take a back seat. Well, are we like it or not?
Yeah, exactly. It's with players, definitely. You know, they you know need to perform, and I think that having that perspective of knowing what they're going through, you know, you've got to try and just be the kind of calming type person around them. Which can be tough at times, but, you know, they're dealing with a lot, and then for us as well. But one thing I always try to say, and I didn't in my first few years of doing it, but it kind of came apparent to me that, you know, everybody at the club, we're all trying to got the same goal, and we've all got the same, we're all wearing the same badge. So we're all trying to help each other. Where sometimes it gets a little bit lost or missed sometimes. And I wish I had somebody to say that to me when I was at a club, or because at the end of the day, everybody wants to win. It's just like some people go, go about in different ways, and they say we're all different, but
And then obviously the playing, nobody can play forever no matter who you are. When did the idea first come into your head then about, say, going on and studying? I think you did sport and exercise science at the University of the West of Scotland. I'm just thinking, was that something that always was in your head that you wanted to almost stay in the game after you finished playing, or did it just come to you towards the end of your playing career?
No, it came to me at the end of my playing career. I actually didn't know what I was going to do. I always felt that even like when I was close to, when I was 29, 30, 31, I still thought I could make a, get a decent move somewhere still. So I was just very much focused on football. And I was at Notts County at the time, and it was going quite well in my first season. And so I always just focused on football. But I was always quite good academically. I just didn't apply myself at times because I always knew I was going to be a footballer when I was 14, 15. And so that side always came fairly easy to me. But when I decided to go back into kind of academia, I was kind of at a crossroads, and I was like 34 maybe, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. But what I realized is that I was getting injured a lot at the time, and I wanted to know why. So that's what kind of got me into sports science, really. And then that, as I say, that desire to help people as well. I love helping people, and I realize now that a lot of people don't want to be helped as well. So I try to offer my advice, and people look at me like, and I'm so that's quite hard to, that's quite hard to get my head around as well. That people need to be in a space where they want to be helped or want that advice, and it's just when knowing when to spot that. So with fear of just kind of going on and going on and going on. So I've got into that. I enrolled on a sports science course. It was Open University at first, my undergraduate, and then I went and done my master's at UWS after that. That was that was great. My first year and second year was extremely tough because I hadn't been in academia for a few years. I failed my first exam was my third year. I failed, and I failed that because I just hadn't been in an exam environment for like 15, 20 years maybe. I was speaking to a client at the time actually, and he just and been doing his exams, and he was like, "Oh, do it like this, structure it like this." And I was like, "Okay." So I've done it. And it was the worst advice ever. And I've let him know as well. But basically, it was a 3-hour exam. I structured all my answers, and by the time I looked up at the clock, there was half an hour to go to actually do the answers. And my handwriting must have looked like doctor's handwriting. So they couldn't have known what I was talking about. It was just gibberish on the page, really. So yes, yeah, so I failed my first exam. But then when I went back for my reset, it was all fine because I got the strategy right, and that was fine. And I'm kind of now I'm kind of underway, and everything's all good. So yeah.
And did you enjoy the studying?
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I love it. I don't read any kind of novel or fiction or anything like that because I don't think I'm learning anything. So I always like to read stuff where I'm learning about what I do. Absolutely love it.
Interesting, Johnny, what Junior's saying, that not everybody wants to take on board the advice that Junior's given. I mean, I find that a bit odd, but strange if you're in a professional sporting environment. And I was, like, say, I was there, I think I would be quite receptive and wanting to take whatever advice that I could get. I find it strange. I mean, you personally, Johnny, you're into fitness as well, so I can imagine you'd be similar, but it's odd, isn't it? If sport's your career, you would probably want to try and enhance it and extend it as long as possible.
Nah, people are weird, hey, aren't they? But no, listen, I think if you're getting advice from somebody who's been in, never mind, advice off the pitch, but even on the pitch as well. Junior's been involved in the game a long time, and obviously there's whilst he might have failed his first exam, there's obviously a few brain cells in there, so he knows what he's talking about. So I'm the same as you, Damien. Like, I'm obviously doing the marathon here in April, and I'm listening to a podcast at the minute about nutrition and stuff like that, and there's things that I never even thought about, you know, before even going out. So yeah, I think every day's a learning day, I suppose, that sort of thing. And I suppose that sort of sports science now is so important. Like, I don't know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, if it was as important. Maybe I could be totally wrong, but it just seems now it's just really, really important. And I suppose with the way that Corian's going and do have plans to go, it's only going to, you know, it's off the pitch work's nearly going to be as important on the pitch as well in terms of recovery and things like that. So, no, yeah, I think it's massive. It doesn't. It's one that would interest me in terms of, you know, learn about it and why people do this and do that and don't do this and don't do, you know, and you hear, you know, why you might hear X and you hear Y, and some answers might be Z. It's just people just have their own different personal spins on it and their own, you know, different perspective, I suppose. No, I find all that really, really interesting.
And then, Junior, obviously your studies were complete, and then you ended up again back, I think, at St Mirren, this time not as a player, but more the sports science aspect of things. And then I believe that's where you first come into contact with Oren Kearney, the Korea manager.
Yeah, that's what it was. Oren who got me into St Mirren, along with other people making some recommendations. So, I always feel like extremely lucky, you know, to fall in onto that path. What, you know, people look at, you know, I used to work at St Mirren, I used to play for St Mirren, and I ended up being a sports scientist there, and that was the link. That wasn't the link at all. It was I put in a lot of hard work up until then. I was at Thistle for three and a half years. I put in a lot of hard work to get the Thistle job, which I was extremely lucky to get as well. And it was like a chance meeting with a player 3,000 miles away when we was over in the West Indies when I was head of sports science for Munster at, and he was the player, and he just went back and spoke to Thistle manager Alan Archibald, and I lived literally 5 minutes away from Partick Thistle's ground. It was unbelievable. So I met somebody 3,000 miles away to end up being in a job 5 minutes away from my house. And I was looking at all clubs at the time, because I was just coming up to the end of my undergrad. So I would have been a qualified sports scientist at the time. And I was looking at like Carlisle, United, all places, like from Glasgow. And yeah, I ended up working for Partick Thistle, which was 5 minutes away from me. So, and then while I was there, obviously got some recommendations from there to Oren, and I met Oren and the physio, had an interview, and they decided to take me to St Mirren, and I absolutely loved it, loved working with Oren, I've said before, but what he did at St Mirren was an absolute miracle, because when he came in, the place was in a mess. I'm not sure if he said that, but I'll say that. I can say that it was an absolute mess, just from the playing staff, just what had been kind of accumulated, and just the kind of feeling around the camp, and that it wasn't a very good vibe. And he definitely changed things. And for us to stay up in the way that we did was great, and really well deserved as well.
What was it like going back to St Mirren? Because obviously the stadium and all had changed, hadn't it, by the time you played and then came back as a coach to take it all?
Really good setup. It's a great club, it really is. There's a lot of people who care deeply about the place. The CEO at the time, Tony Fitzpatrick, you know, he's done great work. He's moved on now. He's left a legacy there for sure. But they're doing really well now. But you know, I came in and Oren came in, built on what Jack Ross did, and it's just been every manager that's been there, since Jack, and then manager came in, kind of done his best to kind of maybe make things not so good. Oren came in, cleared up that mess, and then it's just built year on year after that from Jim Goodwin onto the new manager now, and new manager now is doing absolutely amazing. But it was built on the back of all this hard work that's gone on. I've been there and seen it over the last three or four years. So it's really good. It's really kind of satisfying to see. And the people who are still there, I know, I'm really pleased for them.
Yeah, Stephen Robinson's doing a really good job there.
He is, yeah.
Yeah, were you, obviously then, like Oren and you sort of landed around the same time at St Mirren, and you had that dramatic year in many respects.
Yeah.
And then at the end of that year, then Orne then departed again. Were you surprised that he left, and were you then disappointed that he left too, given that what you had achieved together as part of a team?
Yeah, well, I was. It came out of the blue. I was disappointed because, you know, got on really well with Orne, and it was a good working relationship. And then you don't know what's gonna. It's just the unknown, isn't it? What's gonna happen after that? You know, who's gonna come in? And I was very lucky that Jim Goodwin came in. Good guy, good manager. So again, I'm very, very lucky. I think what Orne done was absolutely amazing. It was I think it's the best achievement that's happened at St Mirren for a very long time. Yeah, and actually, we actually had the chance to actually stay up before the playoffs. Actually, one of the players was playing against St Johnston. I think it was a game or two before the, a game or two before the end of the season. We had a penalty to beat St Johnston 2-1. It would have been 2-1, and he penenka'd it, and he missed it. So it was like I think it was actually like the last game before to decide whether it was going to be in the playoff or just stay up. And if we won that game, our season would have finished like 5 days later or something. He penenka'd it, and then everybody had to stay for another 2 or 3 weeks or whatever, so we could play these playoff games. To say that people weren't really in a good mood after that.
What did Orne say in the changing room after that game?
I can't remember, but I know he wouldn't have been happy like most of us. But you know what? The way how it all worked out and it ended up was great, and it was dramatic. And do you know what? I think if you could choose which way to do it, I think maybe go that playoff way and winning on penalties the way we did, and the way it brought everybody together, and the you know, the celebrations that we had and everything. So it worked out well in the end.
It's just like some things are meant to be, and in your career, it seems to be. I don't know if you're a believer in things are meant to be for you and the way that your path works out, but that just seems to be that your path and career has led you to different places for different reasons. And that's St Mirren, the way that season ended is a perfect example of that, where it was just almost written in the stars, if you like, or destined to be that way.
Yeah, definitely. And I think I get to a stage now where I try not to get too uptight or too... during games, I think my first 3 or 4 years as a sports scientist, you know, you're sitting down, you can't do too much when you're sitting on the bench. And I used to get really quite animated and really quite, quite high anxiety, and because there's so much vested interest in it, you know, you put so much into it and you know all the players and the staff and everybody, so you just want everybody to do well. But now I'm a little bit more relaxed. I still do a running commentary when I'm sitting there. So people beside me, maybe I get, it's a little bit annoying, I'm a little bit more relaxed now because, you know, you do all your work during the week and then it's, you know, you can't do much more. So it's over to the players and just try and enjoy the experience.
And then, of course, you thought you'd seen the end of Orne. You thought you'd seen the back of him. He goes back home to Corian. He takes over at Corian for a second spell. You get on with your own career and your own life and do whatever you have to do. What a great 12 months we had together. And then, lo and behold, what happened? I mean, how did you get together again? Talk us through what happened, how you ended up, you know, leaving Scotland and ending up in Northern Ireland, of all places.
Yeah, so we remained in contact. I'm a person, I don't like to annoy people, and I don't think people really want me to be messaging them all the time and stuff like that. So I came over here with my family, so we could be closer to my wife's family, that was just off a suggestion, and it just kind of just snowballed. So I was at Hearts, I was head of academy performance at Hearts, for a year and a half maybe. Great club, loads of stuff going on. I learned a load from the actual head of performance at the club, Bob McCunn. He's a great practitioner. So it kind of took me to the next level, I think, in sports science. And then, we came over here and we thought, you know what, it might be a good thing for the family. And was like, okay, let's do it. So we did it. And I was kind of getting to a stage with sports science that because there was a lot going on at heart, so I was like, you know what, I think maybe have a change of career and just see what that's like. I wasn't thinking anything about Colrain in any way, shape or form. And I started working for Randox. They wanted me to get more business in football for blood diagnostics for the players. So for me, again, with the luck element of it, it was really engaging for me because I knew as a sports scientist, what they're offering is just the total foundation and fundamentals of athletic performance. You know, for yourself, you're doing your marathon training. So for example, you get an athlete, you go, right, how are we going to make them better? Well, let's first get their bloods taken. Once you get your bloods taken, then we know exactly what you might be deficient in, and then that's going to help you with your performance. So for that, it was really easy for me to go to clubs and say, look, you know, I definitely believe that you need this. So I was doing that for 6 or 7 months, but then I was in the office a lot, and I'm not an office type, and I needed to be on the move. I was only doing like 1,000, 2,000 steps a day. And I could not take it. It was really getting to me. So while I was sitting there at my desk, I spoke to Oren and I was like, look, you know, how are you? Blah, blah, blah. He's like, what, you're in Northern Ireland? I was like, yeah. He was like, okay, let's have a chat. So he just kind of went from there.
I'm sure, Johnny, I'm sure like that would have been a priceless comment. Like, Oren just suddenly realizing, what, you're in Northern Ireland and you're here to stay, you're living here.
You can see the light bulbs probably just shining.
You can. And I think, Johnny, if you probably remember this as well, when we spoke to Oren about Junior first day, going back a little bit of time, and he did say, I think, to you, that he tried to keep it all secret. He didn't want anyone else to know that Junior was here.
Oren is the most meticulous human being I've ever met, and I mean that, like, he just knows everything and has everything down to a fine art. I remember doing the Oren phone me about it, and he's like, look, need to keep this quiet and whatever, and I was like, yeah, we don't want Lauren or Glenn Thorne finding out and stuff like that. It was just so like, it's just so, just wanted everything sort of done. And I suppose whenever the club obviously has ambitions to go full time, or you know, or hybrid, or even or some sort of whatever full time football. And, yeah, I think obviously as we spoke about earlier, sports science is a massive part behind that. So I think before, and obviously working with Junior and Junior moving back over to Northern Ireland, it's just sort of aligned. So who knows? Hey, if Oren gets this job in Saudi Arabia, you might actually end up in Saudi Arabia after all. You know. So, but no, it's just mad how things like that just obviously just work out. And I suppose Oren said that, you know, he'd have been the first in the training ground, and Junior would have been second, and they'd have been the first two to leave. So I suppose if you have a good bond as well, it always helps. And Oren's always had a close bond, obviously, with his background stuff anyway. So when you tie all that in together, it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. So it's an easy decision for me to go and work with Oren again.
As the break from football, where at your appetite, you know, what Randox do whenever you go back into football, is it sort of just maybe the break was good and a bit better?
Totally. I think like my first day back, my first week back with Colrain, like I was on cloud nine. absolutely love it, and I'm so glad to be back in. Randox was a great company. What they offer, the guy who owns it, who founded it many years ago, great guy, and he was very hands-on as well. So anytime he was in the boardroom, you know, all his message was is that, look, we just want people, we just want to know, we just want to tell people about it, and just get the message out there that, you know, we're here to help people, like, and it was just it's amazing. So I've got, you know, nothing but you know, good things to say about that, but I say it just wasn't for me at the time. And you know, it was fairly early on, as I say, and I messaged Oren, and he was like, okay, do you know what, let's have a chat. So
what have you made of the Irish League so far? Obviously I know we've had a few indifferent results, and what have you made of it, and has it surprised you, the standard? No, or what?
um pleasantly surprised. But you know, I didn't have any real kind of preconceptions about it. When I see the players at Coleraine, the ability that they've got and the training sessions and what they've been doing in matches, and I know that the squad is starting to get a little bit more fuller now, hasn't it? You know, in recent months. So I think from that side of it, but I've been really, really impressed. And I'm not just saying that, like, you know, there's some right good quality, comparable to, you know, any of my times over in Scotland. So yeah, it's been, yeah, really, really good.
Am I right in saying that you're working with the guys who are full time at the minute? Would I be right in saying that you're doing a wee bit extra with, like, to Jamie McGonigal? Good luck making that man run. I know he's Jack Scott guys like that. So.
He's got some quality, hasn't he? He's got some quality. But we, yeah. So we're doing a little bit with some of the players, and it's just a case of some of the other players have got day jobs, haven't they? So when we transition, you know, players that we have been doing stuff with, you know, they'll have a few months under their belt with me and doing certain things in the gym, and it's just kind of getting them accustomed to certain things that I'll want them to do. And yeah, we always try and keep things fairly simple, because I think that then people don't need me then. And you know, I don't like people kind of feeling like they need me every 2 seconds to you know, for certain exercise or anything like that. I like people to try and be as autonomous as possible, really. So I think do the good things, do the most important things, keep it simple but really, really well, be consistent with that. And I've found that has kind of been I've been fairly successful with that. So I just can kind of continue down that road.
sorry, and then just wondering, because there's a bit of a disparity between the sort of the number of the full-time players are there that are able to commit to that at present, and then you've got a larger number probably of part-time players that train maybe that 2-3 times a week. Do you then not devise plans for them, but do you offer them advice then about maybe extra training away from the regulated training, or advice on nutrition or those type of things to try to help them stay up to speed with the ones that are full time?
Yes, but basically what I do is, at the moment, is we treat everybody as one unit, because what can happen is that if you kind of go in and do too much too soon, then it can become a bit of an overload. And then not only just that, cognitively, you know, overloaded, physically overloaded as well. So it needs to be just little kind of take a, like a slow approach. And then you just kind of build over time. And again, you know, this is what I found this to be successful at Thistle and at St Mirren. And then what happens is that from the back of that, you have more players to choose from an injury prevention standpoint. So, but fine, if you kind of go in and overload everybody straight away, then that kind of can be a little bit too much, and you end up not getting much across at all. So you just kind of just choose when you kind of put little bits of information out, with the gym sessions as well. You know, you don't do too much. You just kind of drip feed in certain exercises, and then what I'll do is I'll do certain exercises in on pitch as well, so you can get some kind of strength exercises in on pitch while they're training. So I'll do that, and I have done that. But yeah, it's just a case of just slowly drip feeding things in.
And what has been the response from the guys? Are they all good with it?
You'll have to ask them, but I know it seems like there's been a good response. I've really enjoyed working with them. Yeah, I've been really, really surprised, actually, just kind of how receptive everybody's been. I absolutely love it at the moment. Absolutely love it. Yeah.
And can you understand them all?
Yeah. Easy. Easy. Just about. Just about. Just about. No, I do, because I no, I've moved away. I lived in Scotland for a good while, and I've, you know, I had many many friends from over the water, from over here as well. And so, yeah, so
your ears well tuned into the,
no
Northampton dialect, the brogue. just looking ahead, obviously, the arrangement you've come in this season, the much publicised takeover has now been confirmed. It was in the background for quite some time at the club. It's now being confirmed, and we had the two new owners on the podcast last week, which was great to hear their plans and vision for the future. From your point, obviously, you say it's like not doing too much too soon and just starting and putting this sort of the building blocks in place, as it were. I just wonder, as we move forward, say come the summer and the start of next season, will you take on more of a role? Will that side of things take a more prominent role, if you like?
Yeah, and so the departments that I ran before at St Mirren, Hearts, at Thistle, then we'll start to look more like that. As I say, at the moment, you just kind of just drip feeding, put the building blocks in, and then a lot of the time as well is knowing not what to do. So sometimes you can come in and kind of be a bit of a bull in a china shop and kind of try to implement everything as well. And a lot of the time that can be detrimental as well. So sometimes when I'm not saying I'm massively experienced, but when you do hire people who are fairly experienced, like sometimes they know, they know not what to do as well, which is just as important. So yeah, as I say, it's just putting building blocks in place, and then once full time and we're up and running, then the department will start to look a lot more like departments that I've ran before, but a really good blueprint from Hearts, their department. They've got a big MDT at Hearts, and it's really quite, yeah, it's quite awesome, really. So hopefully one day we can have a department like that at Coleraine that we've got at Hearts.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Johnny, that's an exciting development, isn't it? If I was a player at Corian, I would be hugely excited by that, because you look around and you see, I suppose, in sport now, strength and conditioning is huge. You only have to look at, say, other teams, perhaps in the Irish League. You look at maybe the rugby teams, you look at the Gaelic teams, their strength and conditioning is quite clear to see. And there's no doubt that that has to give you an advantage somewhere along the line, doesn't it? I'm not saying it's the be-all and end-all, but if your players are in the top physical and mental condition, then it has to give you a bit of an advantage or a slight percentage.
Yeah, every percentage helps. And I suppose the recovery is nearly just as important as anything else as well. So, yeah, look, I think you look at Larne, and again, they play a lot of matches on the Friday night, and I'm sure Junior can probably elaborate better than me, but I think if their players are nice and refreshed all day and sitting eating and having, well prepared, whereas, guys right in the building site and then going to a match, I'm sure there's a positives, or advantages for Larne in terms of that. So, okay, look, I think just the way the things are going, and young players as well, and, likes of Senan, Divine, if I was Senan and this was in and things like that, and he can learn from all that at the age of 16. Well, what's he not going to be in physical shape? Is he not going to be like when he's what, 19, 20, 21? So, yeah, look, I think every percentage that works in our favour can only be a good thing.
Hey, that's a good point. Sorry, Junior, that's a good point, Johnny makes. Like, you've got Senan Divine there, you've got young Alfie Gaston. I think in the schoolboy centenary squad that Northern Ireland beat England 3-0 last week, sorry about that, you had four Korean players involved in that Northern Ireland team. And the owners spoke when they were on the podcast about they were very keen to develop that side of the game, at the club, that academy and the full-time aspect. And that would be, for somebody like you, that must be an absolute dream to get to work with young players like that and be able to almost shape how their future goes.
Yeah, so when I spoke to Oren about coming in and just the plans in the future as well, is such a great project, and I'm not planning on going anywhere. So yeah, to be a part of that and to kind of help put building blocks in place for it. Yeah, it's so exciting for me, because as well there's a lot of potential. So you go in at you know, if I was to go into to West Ham or go into a club like Liverpool, you know, there's not much kind of moving room or much, you know, you can really go from there, you know, because you know they're quite close to the finish line,
yeah.
or the departments in place, that is. But yeah, I think that you know it's just a great project, and as I say, there's lots of scope for moving forward.
Yeah, it's almost like a blank canvas you have there, isn't it? Now you can just do your work.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, everybody that I've met at the club as well, you know, they've been really supportive. And you know, and I'll get that support as well moving forward from Oran and the rest of the staff as well.
Very good, very good. It's all very exciting, Johnny, isn't it?
That is definitely, and you know, we'll probably only really see the fruits of labour of that probably, and you know, it'll take a bit of time, as Junior said. There's a few players there you're probably on a, you know, they're further on down the line, like Jamie and Jack. So
yeah,
the time the other boys catch up, who knows? But yeah, look, I think it's going to be seen as a positive. You don't work at Hearts and St Mirren and other teams if you don't know your onions, so to speak. So it'd be interesting to. They see the fruits of the labour. Hey, if Jamie McGonigal can run a bit more down the wing, then we'll sure they'll all pay off. So, it'd be exciting to see what happens.
Yeah, you're very sore on him.
It'll just be weird seeing guys train at the football club throughout the day. I think that'll be the first. That'll be very strange, because you're just, you know, anytime you drive by the showgrounds at like 10, 11 o'clock, it's always quiet, and it'll be weird seeing cars outside.
Strange.
I think that'll be the first bit I'll find really, really weird. Weird.
But then that's what it's all about. That
100%
full time. That goes with it, doesn't it? I mean, Junior, we'll be finishing shortly. But I mean, ultimately, from what you're talking about and you're saying, it's clear you're enjoying your time here. I know you've only just started, but so far so good. You're enjoying your time at Corian and the North Coast.
I am, and for me, it's just I just like being around good people, good friendly folk, and like I've seen that in abundance at Coleraine. So yeah, I feel very much at home, and one of the reasons why I actually came over to Northern Ireland as well, because I've always felt you know there's always been a warm welcome and nice people over here as well. So you know, that's what I'm about, and that's why I've never moved back to London. So yeah.
Yeah, I know your family ties are to Montserrat, etc. And while it's not exactly sort of West Indies up here, we do have some decent beaches.
I know exactly. I've been up the North Coast, and it's absolutely amazing. So yeah, I've been to some nice beaches, but that those are up there for sure. Really, really nice. I was really quite blown away. And maybe about the first time, about 4 or 5 years ago, I went to one, and I was really blown away. And we go up there as much as we can. And so now I'm here as well. We'd be doing a little bit more as well. So looking forward to that.
Can I ask if you're into any other sports? Are you into any other? Do you watch any other sports?
I got into cycling during lockdown, and I got a bike, and yes, I've been out on that a little bit. So, but growing up, I was into everything. So I like literally all sports. I was literally into everything when I was a kid. So yeah, tried my hand at it all. So what's your other sports that you're into?
I watch more than I play, to be honest. Tennis, snooker, golf. Yuck, I give anything a go, really.
Yeah.
Anything but rugby. Can't watch rugby. Can't.
Johnny doesn't do rugby. I would be into anything, most sports, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
Can give anything a go, bar rugby or cricket, to be honest.
No, cricket's all right now.
Cricket's good to play. Like, you should, like, to play cricket's quality to play. Like, it's really...
I don't mind watching it. Watching it's all right too. You know, it's one of them things. It is what it is. It's not the most quickest game, but it has its moments. You know, let's face it. Like, so
yeah.
But I think it's all good. We all sports are to be welcomed. Well, here, Junior, thank you very much for your time. I'm sure you're a busy guy. Today is what, Tuesday, is it?
Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah. What have you on today? Are you at the club today? Then is that part of your plan?
I'm just doing some reports and stuff, so I'll be doing a little bit of that with the players. I've had a couple of days off there after the week, I'm going to be cracking on with that. And then we've got some training this week, and then obviously we're going to prepare for a big one. Following weekend, so
yeah, I mean that's right because it's Irish Cup weekend. The boys aren't in the thing. I've just when you mention it, your next game is against Larne, and I suppose key to it is how to structure that 2 week period, almost from the Newry game to the Larne game, and you and Oren and the rest of the background team. That's where you really come into your own, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know. We've got the structure of how we're going to lead into this game. Yeah, it's just a case of, you know, just all the players want to play, don't they? So, you know, they'd love to have a game this Saturday. We haven't got one, so that, you know, that's not ideal. But we you know, the week's been structured, and then the lead in for Larne, and just looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing them in the flesh and kind of. You know, is it a benchmark? You know, let's see, and we can kind of take it from there. But yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that game.
Yeah, that's a big one, Johnny. I mean, Linfield came down here Friday, a couple of Fridays ago. Everybody expected Linfield to sort of win quite comfortably. Corrine upset the score, tore up the script. Do you think they're capable of giving Larne something similar? Obviously. Corrine have turned a bit of a corner. They've won their last two games. The players are coming back, as Junior mentioned earlier in the podcast. It's potentially a good time to be playing Larne at home.
Yeah, I think Corrine probably going that with nothing really they lose. I think everyone will be expecting Larne to go there and kick on. And I think Larne have just hit that run of form where they've just went up another gear, haven't they? They're, I think, is it 21 matches unbeaten in the league? And they've got, you know, a reasonably, I wouldn't say comfortable, but disrespectful, but they've got a favourable home draw, I think, in the Irish Cup on Saturday. I'm actually going to go and watch that match for work, I think. So, yeah, I think, there's no reason why we can't go and beat them. The games have usually been very, very tight, especially as well. So, they'll probably not fancy coming up to Corrine either, let's be perfectly honest. So, and as well as that, I think their last three games now before the split, I do think we need to win probably two or three of them, you know, to finish in the top six. So, yeah, we'll probably just have to concentrate on ourselves. And yeah, look, Larne are a great team. You're not big champions for no reason, but they're there to be shot at, and there's no reason why we can't go and ruffle them up and try and get a positive result.
Yeah, well, I second that. It is they almost are the benchmark, Junior, aren't they, as to what way a club can be transformed, because you look where they came from, where they are now, and that's I'll be like a perfect game for you. You'll be in your element just watching what they do.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing that. But, you know, I think, as I said, you know, I've been really, really impressed with what we have and what we can do as well. So, it's really exciting. And I just think, like, you know, this season and then, you know, the following seasons as well, it's just, really, really excited.
Looking forward to it. Junior, thank you very much for coming on. Good luck with the training and your reports this week. Johnny, good luck. I don't know where you're at. You said that you're at the Irish Cup. We will talk about that after the week has gone. So, Junior, once again, thank you very much. Johnny, thank you very much. And to anybody listening to the podcast, as ever, thank you very much for your support. And come on, the Bandsiders.